Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Sports is business. And whenever you are procuring talent, you must start with a criteria.
Being owners of this league and wanting our league to be the best in the world, how do we make it better?
The valuations are getting so high, the list of people who could purchase a team is getting really short.
We have 8 strategic investment areas when you look at the world of sports.
The NBA is already in 210 countries around the world.
NFL is an amazing thing for the sports betting industry.
We have the World Cup coming in 2026. To North America.
Hey, if I get $1 million for going to a school, trust me, I'll be there.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Coming up on the show, we talk with Big Cat Minnesota Timberwolves All-Star Carl Anthony Towns, who stops by to talk with us about the team's success on the court this year and how Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez entering the ownership group has made a difference.
When you win a big game and everyone's excited and the first people you're seeing in the back is A-Rod and Mark. And you know, when we're playing on the road and we may be in Oklahoma and you're seeing A-Rod courtside cheering as hard as he can for us, we really appreciate that.
Plus, we'll talk about the Dartmouth men's basketball team voting to unionize and the impact that may have on the NCAA's overall business model.
All that and more is on the way. But first, we take a look at some of the biggest headlines in the business of sports with friend of the show, Bloomberg U.S. sports business reporter, Randall Williams. First of all, Randall, welcome back, man, to the Bloomberg
Thank you for having me, as always.
Let's start out, first of all, about LeBron James. He's going to spin out the shop to become a consumer brand. The shop, anybody not familiar with the show, it is set in a barbershop and people have conversations, what we call back in Detroit Tuesday. And it really is a good concept for a show. But now, I guess this has really, gone super duper taken off.
For sure. They've been building towards this for a long time. The shop went on tour last year to HBCUs and a select city. So I'm not surprised by this. I think it's actually a smart move for them to get up under Uninterrupted. And, the LeBron business is ever growing. And now this is his fifth business arm.
Talk to us, Randall, about the LeBron business. I know it's got a number of different legs to the stool for our audience. I wonder if you could just bring us up to speed on what it is and what the size of it is, really.
Sure. So the Spring Hill Company, which hit a $725 million valuation in 2021, is what I would call the holding company. Then you have LRMR Ventures. It's an investment firm founded by James, Randy Mims, Maverick Carter, who's its business partner, and then Rich Paul. You have Uninterrupted, which I think is what people are most familiar with. That's the athlete empowerment arm. The Robot Company, which is a brand culture consultant business. And now you have The Shop, which they call a community connecting business.
I'm just trying to understand, is that $725 million valuation all of those entities, or is that just the sort of...
It's all of the entities. It's everything within that. The Shop was under Uninterrupted. I think that it just did well enough and it grew so much over the years. I mean, they've had just about everybody you can think of, from Obama to Jay-Z and Drake at one point in time. And they even shot an episode with Kanye that was eventually canceled. It's become a cultural tentpole. So I think that it growing as a business is only natural.
Now, we should also add that The Shop is now going overseas to the UK, and it's going to be hosted by none other than Idris Elba.
Yeah, I think that international is a big opportunity for The Shop, just because when you're on YouTube, anybody can watch it. And if you take it to the UK, then I think that makes it a little bit more accessible. And who knows the type of people that Idris will book and Uninterrupted and The Shop will have on there. And so I don't think they have a date just yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing a spinoff. And, if this is successful, then maybe they head to another country sometime soon.
I'm totally on board with an Idris Elba version of The Shop the next season.
For what reason?
many reasons. Before we get into that, though, I'm curious in terms of the five business arms that that LeBron James does have. How do they work together? Is there synergies between them, or did they just kind of develop organically?
I think they developed organically. I know that LRMR Ventures is separate. That's the four horsemen is the best way that I could put it. Mm-hmm. That's LeBron's investment firm, and then you have Uninterrupted, the robot company, the shop. They all work together, but they have separate teams now. So every now and then, I think there's probably some cross-platform collaboration, but I don't think that in any case, like, it's like, oh, this is the shop, and then everybody just comes in.
So the reason I ask is, if LeBron decides to cash in at any point or take in new investment dollars, then they would be all separate entities. It wouldn't be like someone comes into Uninterrupted and they get a stake in the Spring Hill company or the shop or the robot company?
Potentially. I'd probably have to ask them that. I think my thought is that if they were to raise another round of money, that it would just be put towards Spring Hill, and then Spring Hill would distribute amongst the arms, mm-hmm. Which would be Uninterrupted, the robot company, and the shop. So LRMR Ventures does its own thing, but everybody else, I think that money would be distributed based on what Maverick Carter and the rest of the team over there decide.
Randall, is LeBron James going to play for the Los Angeles Lakers next year? I mean, seriously, I mean, all this talk about LeBron moving to the Knicks or the Warriors, I mean, what are your thoughts?
He'll be there. There's a lot that's going to be happening with him over the next couple of seasons. I mean, if you think about the LeBron business from a macro perspective, he wants to own the team in Vegas. He hasn't been shy about saying that. But there's a lot of complications that happen between now and then. The NBA has to get its media deal done. They're going to evaluate cities. And then he also has a betting partnership that he would essentially have to get rid of, because you can't be a betting partner. And then there's the Bronny and Bryce aspect. If he wants to play with his sons, that's maybe three more years of play. Does it happen in LA? I think that he'll stay in LA for the time being, as long as his kids are going to USC, because that makes it easiest for him to go and see them. But afterwards, it's going to get crazy.
But if you thought this was all about LeBron James spinning out the shop, wait, there's more, because next month his company will launch a men's grooming line with global beauty brand Parlux, which my wife says I could use that.
You and me both. You and me both. Yeah, they're launching that. I got a look at it last month at the Super Bowl. It looks gorgeous. Mm. I didn't try out any of the products, but we'll see how it ends up. I think that Walmart is their exclusive partner, so when people see that, you know, LeBron is wearing this, I've no doubt that he and everybody else will be promoting it. And maybe there will be other players and influencers who can help with this business. But we've seen many celebrity businesses take off in different industries. This could be another one.
And I should add, too, that Paul Rivera, he's going to serve as the company's general manager.
Yep, PR.
So I need to include that in there. But I want to add something else, and it's about the NFL's Chiefs. You know, you win a Super Bowl, and then you win another Super Bowl, and then it's like, you know.
Wait,
what?
You missed one more. You win another Super Bowl.
And then you win another Super Bowl. Thanks a lot. And so then you say, you know, old Arrowhead needs to get a $800 million facelift. I like the way it is now. They got that little, they got that big oval, you know, that's the screen there and everything. I love all that
stuff. It's one of the oldest stadiums in the NFL, and that is exactly why they are looking to upgrade it. Those upgrades are estimated to have cost $800 million. The Hunt family has said they're going to put $300 million towards that, and then they want taxpayers to contribute the rest of the $500 million.
Wasn't there a ratings that someone published not so long ago?
The NFLPA published, yes. Not just any someone.
Okay.
Yes, the NFLPA.
It surveyed players and polled them and asked them, you know, what they thought of the facilities. And the Kansas City Chiefs did not come out very well.
They were ranked 31st. I guess, I mean, there's a joke to be made about the cost of winning. But overall, one of the things that I think there is a misconception about with the business of these sports teams is that there are high-class organizations and there are some lower-class organizations. There are some teams that value facilities, and there are some teams that are like, we've been here a long time, these are the things. And then there's some owners who just don't have the money to overhaul an entire stadium. Not everyone is going to be able to do what Steve Ballmer did, which is like, look, I have $2 billion in cash, everybody get out of the way, and I'll build my stadium. There's not a lot of people in the world that can do that. And so that's why he is asking for taxpayer money. But if/when the NFL approves private equity, there's a world where the Chiefs and many other NFL owners could sell a percentage of their team, 10, 15, maybe, depending on what the rules may be, 10, 15, 20%, get 800 to maybe $1 billion, $1.5 billion, overhaul a stadium, and now you have a new party. But as we all know, Billionaires do not like to expand their circles, especially in a family business where you may be welcoming someone that you don't know in.
Now, Randall, what's really interesting to me here is I was under the impression that Arrowhead had to get game ready for the 2026 World Cup, right? Mm-hmm. $800 million. There's no way, whatever facelift they're talking about, for $800 million, they're going to get that spent and invested by 2026. I mean, there's just no way, right? What is the money being used for? And my question is, I guess, is any of that $800 million like going to be kind of fast-tracked across the finish line so that they can get game ready for the World Cup?
No, sir. Absolutely not. Arrowhead will remain what Arrowhead is for the next 2 years, and then these renovations will take place after. And you know, when you think about a stadium in itself, whether it's the World Cup or not, it's a 50-year-old stadium, and a lot of times with these stadiums, teams move. So in a worst case scenario, there's a world where any team that has a super old stadium, you're like, oh well, I can't get the money from taxpayers, I don't want to sell a piece of the team, let me go find a city or a billionaire in a city, i.e. Vegas, who's going to build me a stadium. We're a long ways out from that possibility, but it's something that I think could be in the back of mind of every NFL team that has a Super Bowl stadium.
That's Randall Williams, Bloomberg U.S. Sports business reporter and friend of the show. Now we want to play a snippet of one of the new and cool sports-related shows and podcasts that you should definitely check out. It's called The Deal with Alex Rodriguez and Jason Kelly. When sports, business, and culture collide, there's often a deal to be made. In the latest installment of The Deal, Alex and Jason sit down with New York Giants legend Michael Strahan about the mindset that helped him go from Super Bowl champion to TV correspondent.
When I look at your career, Hall of Fame career, world champion, and then talk about a wild pivot, right?
Yeah.
My question is, did you ever dream that big? What's the best part and what's the toughest part of a job like that? Because you're not talking about football. You're talking about real life stuff.
Well, I almost forget I played football. Unless I go to like my man cave and I see things, I don't think about football. And it's really? Yeah. I watch it now at Fox and I'm like, I'm looking at guys get hit going, who's dumb enough to do that? Mm-hmm. Then I realized I was dumb enough to do that for a long time.
Yeah.
But you're just young and you're in the middle of it. But it has been such a pivot in a sense that, you know, physically, obviously, but mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized a long time ago that being a football player or an athlete, you can get into a room. But once you get in the room, you have to prove that you belong there and that you deserve to stay there.
That's right.
You know, people will take a meeting with you. Everybody wants to take a picture and show their kids they hung out with this athlete. But what keeps you in the room, right? It's your talent. It's the talent that a lot of people don't see or don't think you have because they've only seen you in one way. And for me, the biggest pivot was getting out of my own way, telling myself that I'm more than just a football player. Mm. Because I remember going into these meetings thinking, oh, I'm just this football player. They're just going to see me as this football player. And a friend of mine said, well, they're going to see you how you see yourself.
That was football star Michael Strahan with Alex Rodriguez and Jason Kelly. Watch The Deal with Alex and Jason on Fridays, 7 p.m. on Bloomberg Television, or stream on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Bloomberg Originals. Up next, we turn to a potential major shakeup in collegiate sports. Labor unions for college athletes. You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. Plus, joining us for this conversation, our pal Vanessa Perdomo from Bloomberg Originals. Dartmouth men's basketball team voted to unionize this past Tuesday in an unprecedented step toward forming the first labor union for college athletes and another blow to the NCAA's deteriorating amateur business model. To take us through that and some of the latest legal headlines in sports, we welcome Marty Edel. He is co-chair at Goulston and Storrs Sports Law Practice and adjunct professor at Columbia University. Marty, as always, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Michael, nice to be on. Scarlett, Damian, Vanessa, nice to chat with all of you.
I'm going to start with, it's happened this week, it's the men's basketball team at Dartmouth University. They decided that they wanted to unionize. Dartmouth is not happy about it. Can you tell us more about that?
I can tell you a little bit. So the players, not surprisingly, voted 13-2 to unionize. I'm still trying to figure out why two people voted against it. And Dartmouth is not happy because now they're going to have to bargain if this all gets adopted, and that's a whole process. But if it gets adopted, they'll have to bargain with a union over the terms and conditions of using these basketball players to play at Dartmouth. That could include hours spent, that could include compensation, and for a program that's losing, I think I last saw it, like $3.5 million over the last 5 years, yeah. I don't think Dartmouth is happy about wanting to incur the extra costs.
Now, Dartmouth did something, and they gave a warning to the players, like, hey, you can be expelled. And also, you can be barred from the NCAA. I'm not sure where to fall on that, Marty.
Well, it seems to me that it's a retaliatory comment, which is prohibited. It would become an unfair labor practice under the National Labor Relations Act if ultimately this union comes into being. So it doesn't seem like the smartest move by Dartmouth to threaten people for exercising their right to want to unionize. But there are good defenses that Dartmouth ought to have. Threatening them with expulsion or not playing in the NCAA is not one of those good defenses that Dartmouth may have, but may lead to more litigation and more trouble.
More litigation, more trouble. The NCAA has also come out with a response saying that the NCAA is making changes to deliver more benefits to student athletes, including guaranteed health care and guaranteed scholarships. But the NCAA and student athlete leadership from all three divisions agree college athletes should not be forced into an employment model. Beyond this boilerplate legalese response, what is the NCAA likely to be doing behind the scenes here following this vote at Dartmouth and in anticipation that players at other schools might be thinking along the same lines?
We have a really interesting phenomenon going on now in college sports, which is whether or not the old NCAA model can still work or how it has to be, whether it can be tweaked to work or whether it should just be abandoned. Employment is one of those. Antitrust is another part of the pressures on the NCAA now. And, you know, we can get into the antitrust issues about pay-to-play and name, image, and likeness if you want later. But with respect to employment, this is a real can of worms. What's happened here is you have the National Labor Relations Board through a hearing examiner in the Dartmouth case saying the players can unionize. We have found an effective bargaining unit in the basketball players. And it's only basketball players at Dartmouth. So segue over. How does this affect football players at Dartmouth? How does it affect crew racers at Dartmouth, lacrosse players, women's sports, and the like? And what the hearing examiner has done here is, in my view, somewhat short-sighted by not looking at the whole picture. If you declare all these student athletes to be employees, you will ratchet up the cost of funding intercollegiate sports, particularly in this case at Dartmouth. Where is the school going to get the additional funds to pay its athletes a minimum wage, to pay them more than a minimum wage if the union is able to bargain for it? One of the ways the budgets can be justified is maybe by downgrading a number of sports to club level. And who will this harm? This will harm women who have fought under Title IX for equal recognition. This will harm economically disadvantaged students who now may find that, you know, a scholarship opportunity may no longer be present because the sport in which that student athlete wanted to compete is now a club level.
You know, Marty, I have to ask you this, and this is what I keep grappling with. From the perspective of the Dartmouth basketball player, why unionize? Like, what's the benefit of unionizing? And I want to read something from Kate Haskins, who's on the Dartmouth basketball team. You know, he also works in the dining hall. And back in April 2022, the, I guess, students who worked in the dining hall actually organized with local Services Employment International Union 560, which is the same local union, you know, that the Dartmouth basketball team is unionizing in. And he said staff got increased wages, paid time off and sick leave after the new contract was signed. So now I ask you, you know, from the perspective of your basketball player, what do they hope to get out of this? I mean, are we talking about minimum wages? Are we talking about benefits? I mean, talk to us about what's to be gained from that perspective.
Great question. I think the answer is they're looking for certain guaranteed benefits. Or if I were a student, I would, and were being advised by somebody probably older than 18 or 19 years old, I would be looking for certain guaranteed benefits, health care, and the like, which I think, Scarlett, you were mentioned earlier, is something the NCAA is now trying to suggest should be made available to everyone, the issue of student athletes being employees. Another is, do you get something more than a minimum wage for competing as an athlete? This is problematic from a number of perspectives, one of which is antitrust. What I mean by that is, if you're paying student athletes to compete because you're calling them employees, and as employees they have certain obligations, are you suddenly saying to them, you're a professional now? And this whole idea of college sports as a demand item for consumers should go by the wayside, because now you're competing against professional sports for consumer attention. That's problematic. Benefits is one. Direct compensation is two. Three is maybe they want some guarantees about no cuts from what's there.
Just to follow up on that, you know, like as a student, you know, you're already, I would have to believe as a student athlete, you're already getting, you know, a little bit of an adapted schedule because of the demands that playing the sport probably put on you. You're probably getting some sort of, you know, housing or, you know, food budget. I mean, again, I don't know, and I'm sure it varies from place to place.
I'd love to step in here.
Yeah,
Damian,
please.
Because I do. Right. I was a Division I athlete. So this conversation is very interesting to me because, you know, when you talk about benefits and you talk about things like that, I don't know what the extra healthcare benefits are. You can go to get any kind of health benefits you want. It's all at your disposal already within the medical training staff at the athletic program. And everyone does have the same, you know, access to it. So I think that it's interesting, and I'd love to get your take here, Marty. Like, for me, that doesn't seem to make sense. It almost seems like this is a danger when you think about what it could do. Like how you were saying, it could make some sports go down to the club level, and then they wouldn't have that same access that they do as Division I athletes.
Yeah, so that's a great point. I mean, so what happens to the athlete who receives an athletically terminating injury? Is the athlete still going to be covered under the medical plan for athletes, or now under a union plan, will that athlete be covered for life? Those are some of the issues that need to be looked into. Could colleges and universities make them one and the same? Of course they can. And that's something that needs to be looked into, in my view. I always like posing to my law school class, so what happens now if the athletes become unionized and say that they don't want to play on Tuesdays and Thursdays of a particular week? Is that a bargaining chip that they could argue for? It would throw, for instance, the Ivy League schedule up in the air, or I guess the Ivy League schedule is mostly Fridays and Saturdays. So they say they don't want to play Fridays and Saturdays. What happens then? Nobody's looking into, it seems, at least I haven't heard it, how this will harm the programs that they want. And are these really students, or are these athletes who could be employees? You know, there's an old history to this back in the 1880s, and no, I am not that old that I remember it. Colleges that played football, Harvard, Yale, Rutgers, Princeton, used to hire people to play for them. And so Harvard might be playing Yale one weekend, and the next weekend, and using this, Harvard might have hired these 10, 20 players, and they're paying them. The next week, Yale may hire those same players by offering them more money. That's not the system of college sports. It probably ought not to be the system of college sports if college sports retains an individual identity for consumers. You know, you want to identify with players. You don't want to see them constantly transferring. But a new regime in which players are considered employees, the players are allowed to bargain for any type of compensation, may mean that they're also entitled to transfer at will. And there was a recent case striking down NCAA regulations limiting portal transfers on antitrust grounds.
You know, I've always been an advocate that there are certain people and athletes that obviously the schools are making a lot of money off of them, that, you know, the media rights deals are out of control. But I almost think that if the unions, if this starts becoming more of a thing, then you will see less Division I conferences be able to keep up with that model, because not all schools actually create revenue. You know, I went to a mid-major D1, so there's no way that if all of us were paid that they can continue to be at that level. So do you think that that would be something where we would see only maybe the Power Five conferences be able to sustain that model?
Yes, but with one big exception. So the National Labor Relations Act does not cover state employees. So to the extent you're a student athlete at state university, you're not covered under the National Labor Relations Act. Mm. That creates an uneven playing field. And ultimately, going to the precise nature, I think, of your question, how do these schools afford an education or the opportunity for an education to these student athletes if they're simply employees?
Our thanks to Marty Edel for joining us. He's co-chair at Goulston and Storrs Sports Law Practice and adjunct professor at Columbia University. Coming up, we hang out with NBA star Minnesota Timberwolves power forward Karl-Anthony Towns. That is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. Karl-Anthony Towns is in the middle of another big year. The four-time All-Star is leading his Minnesota Timberwolves to one of its best seasons in recent memory, on track to win 50 or more games for the first time in 20 years. Unfortunately for Big Cat, news broke on Thursday that he tore his meniscus in his left knee and will be out indefinitely. We wish him a speedy recovery. We spoke to Karl before the news of his injury. Karl-Anthony Towns, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports, sir.
Appreciate you for having me.
Now, someone told me that you have something on a jacket. You got to tell me what the jacket is.
I mean, it's just a little, you know, today I was feeling shouting out a little love for NASCAR. So wearing a little Dale Earnhardt Jeff Hamilton.
Like, oh,
speaking to him, Carl.
Oh, I'm so okay. See, I love you, man.
Oh, Carl, man. I can't believe Michael just introduced you as a center. I mean, the size of that front court. Are you really the center of the Minnesota Timberwolves? I mean, come on, you're like a. I mean, you guys are huge.
Center.
And this defense.
We definitely got the, no the power size. Forward.
Yeah, it's unreal.
I'm just gonna ask the question and get this out of the way now. The elephant in the room. You guys are about to hit 50 wins. First time in 20 years. Stupid yes. Question number 245 you're going to hear. How does it make you feel?
Well, I mean, it makes me feel good. You know, I've been here, you know, 9 years and seeing how it could go, you know, when you're not having 50 wins and you're struggling to get 30 or even mid-20s. And now to be at this position now is it's a blessing to be able to see, you know, the other side, you know, when you're winning and everything's going really well.
It feels good, I'm sure. And the team is on a stretch run to the playoffs, of course. There's also a lot of developments when it comes to the franchise and the ownership, right? Because Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez are going to become bigger members of the ownership group, taking on more of a stake. I'm curious to hear from your perspective how that has brought more attention and interest to the franchise, not just from the public, but from the league and from the public overall.
I think obviously when you bring in someone who's as big of a celebrity as Alex Rodriguez into the fold, I mean, obviously everyone's attention goes up. So him and Mark have been amazing in the transition to being our owners, and they've been very active in being present. I think that professional athletes everywhere who are listening to this or who may listen to this know what I mean when I say that we really appreciate when our owners are in, actually there, you know, with us through the journey, through the trials and tribulations, through the ebbs and flows of the season. A-Rod and Mark have been right there with us every step of the way. So everyone in our locker room has tremendous respect for them and are very excited for the next chapter.
Can you give me a specific example of how they're present and how that really shows up?
I think it's pretty simple. Like even games in Miami, all those times when you win a big game and everyone's excited and the first people you're seeing in the back is A-Rod and Mark. And, you know, when we're playing on the road and we may be in Oklahoma, and you're seeing A-Rod courtside cheering as hard as he can for us. We really appreciate that. I know professional athletes everywhere really appreciate when you see the owners showing that kind of enthusiasm for our team, for the game, and just wanting to be our biggest fans. I think that's what really makes us appreciate people like A-Rod and Mark Lurie.
It's so funny you say that because I went to a Golden State Warriors game recently and I saw Joe Lacob sitting there at courtside and he had his arms folded. And no matter what was happening in the game, Damian, he had the same expression and he had the same body language. It never changed.
Well, Carl, you know, Scarlett gets to go to these places. She gets to go to Warriors games. She gets owner's box seats. I mean, I'm like,
you
far
see
from
what
it.
She's saying?
Far
yeah.
from
it.
What I need you to tell me, Carl, is you've been in Minneapolis since 2015, right? And I mean, I got to take you back. I got to take you back to November 30th, 2016. And I'll tell you why that date's important to me, because I was at MSG, 47 points, 18 rebounds. I mean, talk to us. That was your sophomore year. What's it like to play in Madison Square Garden today? And how's it different playing in the Target Center out in Minneapolis?
I mean, I'm a hometown kid that way. So, of course, I'm gonna say playing in Madison Square Garden is second to none. That's home. You know, that's something special. My family has roots there. My father was on the training camp squad there. So it has a lot of family ties, the Knicks and the Madison Square Garden. So it's always really fun when I get to go out there and compete and be able to play in front of my family, who is all based in Jersey and New York, and be able to have those kind of moments that me and my mom growing up, we would look and see Madison Square Garden. I used to tell her I would play there one day and told her just to give me some time. And I'm happy I was able to make that dream and that
Yeah,
motivation come true for her while she was here. So that Madison Square Garden is a special place to play basketball. There's the reason it's called the Mecca. But Target Center is super special. Since I came here in 2015, the Target Center has been the place to be for me. The fans have been great. The atmosphere has only grown as we've shown ourselves to be true contenders. And now we're at a point where, you know, the place is jumping every night, sold out crowd every single night here in Target Center. Unreal, the fans man. Go crazy. Community is really bought into us as a basketball team. So it's a special, special time to be a Timberwolves fan. I'm really happy to be in this position with the team and organization.
By the way, since we mentioned Alex Rodriguez, my bosses would beat me with a wet noodle if I don't mention that A-Rod. Wow. Yeah, I know, man.
It we got to call it. HR.
That's some ramen abuse right there, man. A-Rod and Jason Kelly, they have a brand new podcast, The Deal. So, guys, check it out if you can. It is really great. And since you have that NASCAR jacket on, I am so proud of you, which brings me, I remember back in the day when, you know, people were talking about the athletes wearing corporate logos. And I remember laughing. Yeah. It's like, what is this, NASCAR? Well, here we are now, and it's out there. What formula do you think you have for choosing corporate sponsors and products to promote?
It always goes what aligns with my morals and values. I think one of the biggest things for me is I always try to partner up with people who also want to see the world get better as well. So it's always a charitable component, all the deals I do and the partnerships I have. But I'm really just always looking for partners that align with who I am, what I want to accomplish as a human being. And more importantly, how many kids can we help with this partnership? So I've been very fortunate to be partnering with amazing people like Gatorade, Starry, NBA Infinite. I mean, there's a lot of things that I see that are in my portfolio right now that it's all has a great foundational piece to it. The reasoning behind doing the deal, the reasoning behind the partnership. I think that when you have a solid foundational piece to those kind of deals, it makes the partnership just so much better.
And Scarlett, in case some people, old guys like me, when you mentioned NBA Infinite, and I was talking to my youngest, who was like 19, I said, hey, John, what is NBA Infinite? He's like, oh, my gosh, Dad, are you that much of a geezer? It's a free play-to-play NBA mobile basketball game. And, of course, he just beat the stew out of me when I tried it the first time.
As long as the younger generation knows what it is on first reference, we're good. We don't need to know what it is, but they need to know what it is.
My nephew loves it. My nephew loves the game. He plays it all the time. He's getting big into basketball. My nephew has just gotten to the age where it's funny. He's starting to realize the people he's around. And he's starting to realize a little more who his uncle is. And it's a scary feeling, but it's a scary sight. But now he's really into basketball. And I remember when the partnership came across my way, I just thought about him. And I remember letting him play the game a little bit, and he loved it. And I loved playing with him. So it was a partnership made.
Yeah, so it made all the sense in the world. I'd like you to explain also your involvement in media, because you served as an executive producer for this short film called Forgiving Johnny that premiered in July 2023. You also are a voice actor. So, Michael Barr, you have some competition here from Carl.
I think the center from the Timberwolves can beat the living snot out of me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in media and as a voice talent?
Yeah, I mean, since I was younger, I just had a love for the arts. And ever since, I mean, first grade, kindergarten, he was already doing, my mom loved to, she always told me just have fun with life. So just always, even since kindergarten, enjoying doing plays and all those things in my school plays and stuff like that, choir. So I just had a great time with just enjoying life and trying to enjoy being young. And I appreciate my mom for giving me that lesson so young and raising me to be willing to accept that lesson as well. And in the media, I have a lot of fun from, you know, with Players Tribune writing letters and articles and to, you know, doing voice acting with Velma on HBO Max and other amazing things, to acting a lot, you know, real live acting, like in What Men Want with Tracy Morgan and everybody on that cast, and coming back now.
I mean, what aren't you doing?
My girlfriend loves that movie.
Carl, I got to tell you, you know, you must be keeping Jess Holtz and the team at CAA really, really busy with all these different, you know, things you've got your hands into, right? I mean, but, you know, what I want to do is I want to go back to St. Joe's High School, right? And I want to go back to a school that, you know, notable alumni, John Bon Jovi, Scarlett, you'll like to know, Jay Williams, who was just on the show a few weeks back. But, you know, for me, with NIL coming to, you know, not just professional, but collegiate, and now high school sports, you know, what does that mean for a school like St. Joe's? I mean, St. Joe's.
I think it's okay. I think what's good about St. Joe's and my area where I grew up in is high school sports is such an integral piece of the community that I don't think it'll ever be diminished by NIL or anything like that. It's just so, it's so ingrained into who we are in that community. And I had that same thought as well, like you just said. And when I went back home to put to rest my brother, who was one of the greatest St. Joe's Falcons of all time, and Danny Bricks, just to see the community going crazy about high school sports, just as if when I was in school, it shows, you know, that high school sports in my area is not going to die down anytime soon.
Carl Anthony Towns, center for the Minnesota Timberwolves, four-time All-Star. I'm sounding like Albert Cassell, but man, this is great.
Unbelievable.
2016 NBA Rookie of the Year, right there. Carl Anthony Towns, thank you, sir, for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, no, appreciate you. No better place to be than Bloomberg Sports.
Our special thanks to NBA star Carl Anthony Towns for taking the time and joining us on the show. Heal up soon, my man. This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We are here each and every week at the same time. A special thanks to Bloomberg's Randall Williams and Vanessa Perdomo for joining us this week, as well as to our legal expert, Marty Edel of Goulston and Storrs Sports Law Practice. And, of course, to Minnesota Timberwolves and NBA All-Star Carl Anthony Towns. We wish you a speedy recovery, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Mike LaBarre. For my colleagues, Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer, have a good and safe weekend. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big old money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.